The author of 11 crime fiction novels, most of them set in Ireland, Arlene Hunt is one of our most distinguished members of the Celtic Noir Authors Club. Arlene has just published No Escape, which tells a story of people trafficking and feuding crime families, and she's with me in studio this evening. I was wondering, Arlene, where this started for you, actually, because they're kind of, obviously the two sets, the two themes overlap in a very big way in the telling of the tale. I wondered, had it started with people trafficking or feuding families?
It started more with the fracturing of families. So there are different families in this novel with, we'll say, criminal elements to them. And over the course of certain years that they have fractured, they've fallen out with one another. People have moved away. People have been imprisoned. People have, in a general theme, people have fallen out. And one of the main characters, Leo Kennedy, his father would have been sort of heavily involved in crime back in the day, and then has now become a sort of the archetypal good man. You know, he's become a good man, and like a, people like him. You know, he's, as Leo always refers to him, as he's a blue-eyed barracuda. And you know, he's a chef in London. He's come back to recreate and restart his life, or so he feels.
Ironically, he's considered the black sheep of the family.
He is, yeah.
Because he's not involved in crime.
He's never been involved in crime. He was always the guy who kind of tried as much as he could possibly be to go straight. And then we're also dealing with two girls, Yulia and Celestine, who are travelling from an Eastern European country. They are trying to escape extreme violence in their past, and they're sisters, and one is absolutely trying her very best to protect the other. And they come over and they think that by moving from one country to another country that they're going to find help. They have an aunt who's in the country already, and they're hoping to get to her. And again, looking for a fresh start in life. And then you're dealing with another criminal family called the Wards, and they are also having their own issues, where one is trying to restart her life, and it's just not all
the Wards and the McCabes, I suppose, are the
Wards and the McCabes.
That's the kind of the big feuding family.
But they're the feuders.
We'll come back to the families and the kind of who's trying to escape what in the midst of that. But going back to Yulia and Celestine, this is a subject, you know, trafficking, women being, finding themselves stuck and caught in prostitution, women finding themselves in difficult situations that they're trying to escape from. This has been something that is a theme that has come back again and again in your books. Why do you think that is?
It's because it's abhorrent to me that people can be treated as a commodity. And that's what these women are. It's not just women. There are women and men on this truck that come in.
Yeah.
And
it's not just sexual trafficking.
It's just
slave labour.
You're entering into a black market. And the moment you enter into this situation, your sense of agency is no longer your own. So a lot of these men and women are being sold off to different groups, various different groups, and they have to work and work and work and work until they can afford at some point down the line to get their own paperwork back and their own identity and everything back. And it's not just in one of the girls sent to this sort of upper market sort of casino, which actually operates as a bordello as well. But the other girl is sent down into the back ends of the country to look after plants in a grow house. And this has turned up like more and more often, and I'm amazed at how many people are actually working in like slave labor conditions, you know, for criminal gangs and for criminal drugs on construction sites and everything else. It's endemic, and it's really something that I looked into quite a lot and was kind of surprised to see how many people vanish off the face of the earth when they arrive over in this country, how many people step out of an airport and are met by somebody and are gone and are never traced again. And it's really kind of alarming.
How do you get at that type of research? How do you get at those type of stories?
You have to read a lot. You have to kind of dig deep. You have to go back to the courts. You have to go back to the small things that are picked up when people are arrested, say, in a house down in the middle of Roscommon and stuff like that. And then they're brought up. And then you realise they don't speak the language. They don't know where they've come from. They're not sure who they work for. And they're entirely disposable.
You'd have heard the recent controversy around Janine Cummings and the book American Dirt, where she basically, you know, tells the story of Mexican immigrants who are coming up towards America and coming away from crime in Mexico and the appropriation of culture. What sort of sensibilities and sensitivities do you have to have around telling stories like these, essentially as entertainment, because that's what you're doing in the book?
You have to be super, super careful how you handle their stories, and you have to make it into a situation that you're not trying to tell it from their cultural point of view, but you're telling it more from the narrative of, from my point, is an Irish perspective. So I look at these women not through what they're coming from. What Janine did is she actually wrote as a Mexican woman. I'm not. I'm, for the Ward family, they're all Irish. Mm. And what you look at is how they handle people coming into the country. So you have to be kind of very careful just not to straddle and not to appropriate, and be really, really careful that as you're telling the story, that you're not making it gratuitous and you're not trying to glamorize it in any way, shape or form. And you're not trying to make it like, you know, terribly glib. There's a lot of cost involved in this. One of the worst things to happen to the sisters when they arrive into the country is they're immediately separated. And for two girls who are, you know, what they want most in life is to make a fresh start, to find this aunt and to kind of get away from the kind of lifestyle that they're actually going to be shunted back into again. And it's devastating for them. And part of the book is very much about them trying to find each other again. And like as with Leo Kennedy as well, part of the book is him trying to find his life again and trying to go forward again in his life.
The other thing that strikes me, particularly in the feuding family side of things, now I presume this book would have been done and dusted in terms of your final editing of probably what, 12 months ago?
Oh, at least, yeah.
So, I mean, very recent events in terms of criminal gangs and criminal activities in this country wouldn't have fed into it. But
no.
How does that work? You know, when you're watching stories, because there are shootings in this, there are people shot in cars in a fashion that we have seen, sadly, on the news all too often.
Yeah.
How do you, again, it's about handling the sensitivities of it, I suppose, in some ways, but how does that, the reality of the news, feed into the fiction of a book like No Escape?
It's kind of staggering because it, to me, recently it seems that the violence has escalated. So we're talking about, in No Escape, we're talking about shootings. We're talking, actually, it's mostly a lot about betrayals and people betraying one another.
Yeah.
But there are moments in this book where modern technology has come in and has become very, very terrifying. So, for example, as later in the book, one character is speaking to another character, like you and I are speaking here in the office, but he takes out his mobile phone and he passes it across so that you can see what somebody else far, far away is actually videotaping somebody else, and they're connected. So all this modern technology comes into being like really, really dark and making things more terrifying than they are. But then you look at what happened in the news recently, and you're looking at 17-year-olds being dismembered and their bodies sent all around the city. And it's kind of terrifying to think that what you write in a book, as bad as it might be, there are worse things happening, or there are worse things coming down the pike. It's just, it's alarming to think about it. But, you know, you address these things and you try to address them with a sort of a moderate understanding of not trying to glamorize and not trying to hone in on mm-hmm. violence, but actually to make it a case that you're trying to deal with it in the most realistic way possible, while also understanding the weight of it behind everything else and the cause of what these things. There's nobody in this book who is a particularly bad person until they're pushed to the very limit of it, and then you can see how far people can go.
Mind you, I don't know how good a person Mariposa Ward is. She's married into the Wards, and she was originally a McCabe, so that adds a kind of gives us the kind of the kind of Shakespearean aspect of it, marrying across
families
like
that.
Mariposa
can speak for herself, though. Mariposa says at one point, and I think she's quite clear about this, that she's a product of her environment. And she's unapologetic about that. She's very
That's not an excuse really now, is it? Lots of people come out of difficult environments and they don't do the type of things that Mariposa does in terms of trafficking women. And when, if those women, as we get, there's a very disturbing scene quite early on with Yulia, in fact, where Yulia kind of thinks for a moment that she might rebel. And the physical violence that Mariposa can wreak is frightening.
Mariposa operates on a different level to most of us. Her moral compass isn't a normal person's moral compass.
I wouldn't want to be sailing
by
it for too long, no.
No, but then when you delve a little bit deeper into where Mariposa has come from and the family that Mariposa has come from, and how Mariposa herself, to a degree, has been a sort of used as a commodity from when she was quite younger, you kind of have to understand the mindset under which she operates. She's not like, you know, your average garden, you know, middle-aged lady. She isn't. That's not how she operates. She has her own way of doing things and her own way of thinking of things. And so while on the one hand she is not a good person by any stretch of the imagination, you can kind of empathize with her sometimes, you know.
Well,
for
I suppose
some
you have to,
or
you couldn't write about her.
Yeah, you have to. You know, she has her flaws, but she also has her very minor good sides.
But the other side of that is, I mean, it's interesting that, because so often this is a criticisms that's thrown at crime thrillers, right? Oh, the women are always the victims in these scenarios. They're never the the perpetrators, or they're never the heroes, if you like, of the story. But Mariposa, you know, what was in your mind to put her as at the very centre of this criminal underworld?
I saw her as a fireball. That's exactly how I saw her. I visualised her as a fireball. She comes across on the pages as a fireball. She is almost relentless in a way, to a degree, but she has a certain amount of... there are elements to her that you can kind of just empathise, and you can kind of see how she pings from one thing to another. She's not necessarily rooted in sort of the way most people think.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other person who comes into it is a woman called Corinne. And Corinne comes over from, she comes over from Birmingham. She is in herself like an interesting character. She comes over to work for the wards, and she comes over to find out exactly what the hell's been going on. And Corinne is as much of a weapon as Mariposa is, but in a completely different way.
And there are lots of fairly nasty men in there too.
You'd
be very good in your gender balance.
I've been trying to be very even-handed about this.
You also managed to get it. I didn't know. I didn't realise I'd be, you know, get quite as many laughs as I did. Who's is it again? Who has the guard dog called Ned Stark? In a reference to your beloved
Irene.
Yeah,
one of the girls. She's the mother of one of the younger girls who's been sort of. You know, I won't say she's been used and abused, but she's young and she's an idealist. She thinks it's great hanging around with these kind of slightly criminal guys, and she's a young one.
And so then Game of Thrones was going to make its way in one way or another, was it?
Well, I just thought, you know, when the cards all came crumbling and she went back to her mammy's house, I just thought it was really important that the dog that they had in the house was Nettie Stark.
Just one final question. Given that title, No Escape, I mean, we're looking at the two girls, Julia and her sister.
Yeah.
And they're trying to escape their trafficking situation. We're looking at Leo Kennedy trying to escape his criminal background, and others within the kind of the politics of the two families.
Yeah, they're all trying to escape something.
Situation.
Yeah,
is there an escape? Have you hope?
You'll just have to wait and read it. I think you'll have to get to the end of the story. It is very, very.
But in general terms, are you optimistic?
I'm an optimistic person, of course. But there's a lot of plates spinning in this, and there's a lot of overlap and people doing things, and then it not necessarily working out for them. So I won't say there's no escape. But it's a tricky one.
It's a tricky one. Well, but then it's much easier to just call the book No Escape than It's a Tricky One, although that might be your next year follow-up. Arlene Hunt speaking to us about her latest publication from Hachette Ireland, No Escape.